So do you ever fantasize about winning the lottery and what you would actually do if you had $1 million or more? I do. And I don't even play the lottery, like, ever. And still, I imagine what I would do with such a chunk of change. In fact, just this week, I was online figuring out which car I would get if money and climate change were no object. So now, of course, I am getting ads for the Infiniti Q60 sports coupe on my Facebook feed. Yeah, I wouldn't get a Prius. I probably actually stick with my little Honda Civic, but oh man, that Q60, wow, it is sweet and sleek. And yet, setting aside the particular creep factor of that showing up on my Facebook feed, there is actually something insidious about this kind of fantasizing, as playful and lovely as it can be. Something that, when I really get into it, can easily make me dissatisfied with what I have, even though I already have significantly more than I need and more than I even really want. I like to think my fantasies are pretty modest. I'd buy a few things for myself, like a sweet little house and, you know, maybe some nice furniture. And perhaps the Q60 or some fun shoes and some travel. And I already eat plenty of macaroni and cheese dinner. I love it. But I also then fantasize about giving away large sums to several worthy groups I really care about. I can think of at least a couple of churches I'd love to buy a sanctuary for. My fantasies are about being generous, not greedy. And truth is, I'm not actually especially acquisitive. And even so, fantasizing about winning the lottery can really make me feel poor, even when I most decidedly am not. We live in such a consumer society. Even people who make over $200,000 a year report that they don't feel wealthy, not even all that well off. And I understand why and how they come to feel that way. There is so much out there to have or want, and there will always be something that is beyond our means. And yet, statistically, people making over $200,000 are in the top 2 or 3% of all people in Idaho. Half of that, $100,000 a year, is still in the top 15%. If you make $100,000 a year, you make more than 85% of people in the state of Idaho. There's this very nifty interactive map I found on the New York Times website that you plug in your income and it tells you what percentage you are in each state and even metropolitan areas. For one of the things that living in a consumer society does is to make us feel that our resources are scarce. It skews our sense of place and well-being. It can raise our anxieties. It seems that the more we have, the more anxious we become. There are studies that show that the more people make, the smaller percentage of their income they give away. People with less actually give away more. There are all sorts of theories as to why this might be. People with more feel that they have more to protect. And people with less know that they have to count on others more. Maybe they're paying it forward or paying it back, or maybe it's living by a different kind of equation. One of the reasons people come to church is to learn to live by a different sort of equation, to value our lives differently, not to be viewed or view ourselves by how much we have, to learn to value people and relationship, to be seen and loved for qualities so far beyond a consumer culture, to be seen and see ourselves as spiritual beings of worth, dignity, agency, as people of many gifts, of many sorts. $1 million doesn't buy love. That's the point. You don't need it for the love you can find. We can learn to live as abundant beings, not as consumers who are never filled, but as beings with many gifts and nobility, foibles, even failings, and always and ever worthy of love. I think this is part of the reason people don't really like to talk about church money in church. Because in the light of our consumer-driven culture, it does seem to reflect our worth. And not everyone has the same means. And it can feel awkward, even bad, when you don't have as much as someone else has. And there is this fear that comes up that perhaps even the church has become a place where my worth is measured by the amount I can give. And so we would rather not talk about it. And yet money in this consumer culture is so important to think about and talk about as part of our spiritual lives. The theme of our Celebration Sunday and annual giving drive this year is transformation. That is why you have started seeing butterflies all about the church. And soon you'll start seeing even more. And you can even come to church next Saturday and make some yourself, and then come back and see where your butterflies land. The transformation theme arises for a couple of different reasons. As Alan said, your chrysalis stage, which has lasted for nearly 5 years, your chrysalis stage is coming to an end. The new you, the butterfly of iridescent color and subtle patterns, is emerging. Very soon you will meet the final candidate your ministerial search committee has chosen for your consideration after their lengthy and, yes, exhausting for them, I think, search. And in just 5 weeks, you will be voting on whether to call this candidate. Together, you will dream new dreams of new transformations. Yet we also use the metaphor of transformation because that is what the church is always about. It transforms lives, which then transform the world. Transformation is a big concept that folks are using very thoughtfully here. Transformation is not just about change, but a foundational reorganization, realignment, reprioritization. Remember, that butterfly, that caterpillar, creates its chrysalis and then kind of dissolves and reassembles itself into a butterfly. It's one of the more remarkable things that nature does. And that is the ultimate work of the church, to transform you, to take you out of business as usual, to teach you to see yourselves as spiritual and whole beings, not simply as consumers that the rest of the world wants to tell you you are. Customer service is all about me and my satisfaction. Yet this consumer society is banking, quite literally, on your dissatisfaction, on creating desires that can never be fulfilled. When we bring that paradigm to church, the community will never seem adequate. You will not feel adequate either. The transformation you are about here at BOOF is about a very different kind of equation. May not even be an equation. Call it alchemy. I recently posted a blog by Jordan Nelson Long, a Unitarian Universalist seminarian, to my Facebook page that told the story of her family and how they came to one of our churches and nearly left. She begins, "My husband and I fumbled toward regular church attendance like awkward teenagers. We were shy and shamefaced, almost desperate to connect with the larger something we'd heard through the grapevine that we might find here. But we wanted to find that something without attracting attention or admitting ignorance, and certainly without rearranging anything else in our lives. And so on certain Sundays, we tended to fall into the event, crashing through the doors late, without planning or ceremony, often still rearranging errant pieces of clothing. Other weeks, we didn't make it at all. We're not exclusive, you know. We have lives. Also, we had very little stamina for a long and slow build-up. Give us what we want now so we can get out of here." Naturally, Long's family found it didn't quite work that way. And though they got involved in the community, they always had one foot inching toward the door. They started to see the flaws and inadequacies of the community. She goes on, "Something is missing," we began to whisper. And since we knew that something wasn't in us, the problem clearly lay with the church. Something was wrong with this congregation. It's you, church. It has to be you. And so we prepared to leave. We attended less, checked out emotionally, and pulled back on our financial contributions. Then one Sunday, while traveling, they attended another UU congregation, even as it felt a little like they were cheating on their home church. The minister there preached about the consumer society and why it didn't work in church. It was a powerful sermon, and they felt whooped upside the head. We realized that we weren't satisfied because we cannot consume community. That we were unsure where else to turn because we can't purchase wisdom and depth. And that we need the flawed, frustrating collective because as humans, we are not wired to individually find our way to gratitude, love, or healing. Rather, she found the church is about transformation, a different kind of equation, which can be pretty darn challenging at times. For, she goes on, transformation doesn't always feel good. Sharing time, space, and resources often isn't a warm and fuzzy experience in the immediate moment. Further, growth is hard and maturity is demanding. And our dreams are expensive in ways that exact costs from each of us. At this point in reading Long's blog, I began to read it as a sermon a woman is preaching to her own congregation. There is a depth of sweetness that rises through it. Friends, she says, we need to give more, come always, and ask less. And then, amazingly, counterintuitively, then things get magical. My people, what is happening is nothing short of transformation. You will be nourished. You will be changed. And eventually, you will grow, and in ways that will add richness and depth to your life. So here are Long's final suggestions. As a spiritual practice, try a different way on Sundays. Show up. Breathe. Be. Demand less. Relax more. And know that together we are preparing to change the world. Because we're not making transactions. We are making commitments. I would add that we are committing relationship, the kind of transformative relationship that does change the world. And here's another part of this very good news. You don't have to do this alone. You cannot do it alone. As Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Never doubt that you are such a small group of thoughtful and committed people. You are, as Tony and Jane found out, that little church in Garden City. You are some of the most thoughtful, committed people I have ever met. The church is not about you. It's not about what you get from it, though I truly hope you are getting a great deal. It's about what you all do together. Stand together, good people. Make commitments. Commit relationship. Engage in community, this wildly human community, a glorious community that will sometimes disappoint, often uplift, almost always be messy, complicated, incomplete. A community that carries in it the possibility, the promise of transformation for you, for those sitting by you right now, for the future people who will sit here after you are gone, for the world you live in and will leave to your children's children. Now is a time to stand together, to give as generously and abundantly as you can to support the transformative mission of this church. Give what you can as well to the capital drive that will reduce your indebtedness and free resources in the future. You have an opportunity now to give to the immediate and longer-term future of this beloved community. For part of the different equation, the alchemy, the magic of a church community, is that it embodies, makes manifest the depth of the truth that we are not alone, that we cannot survive alone, that you are in this together, and it only works when you stand together. Together, you are so much more than you are alone. Standing together, you can make seeming miracles. You can bring marriage equality to a state like Idaho. You can feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, save the planet. You can live the abundant life you dream of. So stand together as a people who are willing to stand together to make the world a more compassionate place, who are willing to stand together in the face of mortality, in the face of certain doom, who are willing to be changed, challenged, moved by each other and the call of the Spirit, who are willing to stand together in their vulnerability, their personal shame, in their nobility and spirit of generosity, who are open to change, to new life, who worship an abundance of spirit. Stand together, good people. Be the change that you hope to see. In the name of love, in the name of peace, stand together, oh, you good, good people. Amen, and blessed be.